I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are continuing our exploration and conversation about the homeopathic healing of various different symptoms that are commonly associated with pans and pandas. And Jody, today we're going to talk about sleep. So as we try to do, as I try to remember to do in these episodes, let's start with any personal experience that you have with sleep disruptions and issues that happened with your family.
Let's go back to the very beginning. I feel like sleep is such a, it's relevant to what you've experienced. Like I used to, I remember when Avery was born, she had a little bit of a traumatic birth. And so things were hard in the beginning. And I remember thinking when she was born, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sleep deprivation is horrible. It's so I used to tell my husband, it felt like death by sleep deprivation. And to me, that was up here, that's crazy. And then my younger daughter was born. And she had this dump truck load of medical problems. And it was 14 steps above what I had gone through with Avery. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is a whole nother level of sleep deprivation. This must be the worst. And then pans happened. And it was 48 steps above what I had been through with Gwen whenever she was born. And it was, so I'm talking about my own sleep deprivation. Of course, because mom and dad is matter in all of this. But then also along with pans came Avery's sleep issues, which were it was just a whole different level for me, for her. This was a symptom for her that was I feel the trickle down effect from her being sleep deprived was just so crazy. I felt it contributed to all of her other symptoms, almost making things worse, mm-hmm. Being more irritable, being more fussy, being harder to manage, being just the general feeling of unwell and her not doing good. That I feel her not sleeping well, went into so many areas of her life. And I think hers, started with separation anxiety, but then it became intrusive thoughts and all of it added up to she wasn't sleeping anymore. It was taking her hours to go to bed and it wasn't because she was being a bad kid. She literally could not go to sleep and mm-hmm. it would take me being in the room with her in order for her to sleep every single night. So again, back to my sleep deprivation, it was just this thing that just kept piling up and we just all got more tired and more tired and more tired. And just as much as it was impacting me, it was impacting her in everyday life.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that can happen when it comes to sleep with pans and pandas. A lot of times there is the separation anxiety like you experienced. And so there's the fear of being alone. And I mean, what human, if you've got something on your mind that's bothering you to even a small degree, when mm-hmm. does it show up the most?
Yeah.
It's when you're going to sleep, right? When you're laying down and you're trying to rest, or any time that you're having non-distracted rest time, right? Mm-hmm. That things start to show up and present themselves. And so it's stands to reason that if a child is having anxiety or separation anxiety or intrusive thoughts or any of those things, it is likely going to impact their ability to settle down so that they can sleep. Part of this is because we also have cortisol that is being produced as a response. It's our stress response hormone. And cortisol is exact opposite of melatonin. So cortisol peaks when melatonin is lowest. And they have an alternating relationship, basically. So cortisol helps us wake up and be more alert. And melatonin obviously helps us fall asleep. So if our cortisol is staying higher, it can have an impact on sleep. Mm-hmm. We also have environmental things that have an impact on sleep, including light and the way that our body is responding to light. And the fact that we don't produce melatonin when we have a lot of blue light stimulation, in particular blue light, into our eyes, because our eyes, there's receptors that go from our eyes to our brain so that we can know when it's time to release melatonin that help give the cue. And so when we have the lights that we're always looking at on screens and things like that, we're not getting the signals that we need to get to release melatonin. And so even once it does start to release, it's substantially reduced when we have a lot of light. And I bring this up just because so many people end up needing to use screens to just help settle their kids or give them any bit of relief from what they're experiencing. And so it's this compounding effect. You also have the urinary concerns that can contribute to sleep. And then you have just shifting circadian rhythms because of all of these things with our hormones and stress response and all of these things that can really impact sleep overall. Yeah. There's, you know, and some kids end up with nightmares and night terrors that can be worsened during sleep. And so there's difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, fear of being alone, being awakened by urinary issues. So all of these things can come along and impact sleep. And sometimes we don't even know for sure what it is that's contributing to the sleep disruption. But sleep disruption is a pretty common thing in PANS and PANDAS. Because there are so many things that are underlying it, we are going to see this have a really variable response for when and how it improves. In general, I tend to see this be one of the more slow and steady things that we get wins along the way where sleep starts to improve. And it's sort of mixed in with all of the things, because as you said, Jody, it's this chicken and egg. What's causing what and what's exacerbating what? And they're all so interconnected and interrelated. So as we start to see anxiety improve and rage improve, because rage also has those excitatory neurotransmitters that can really make it hard to settle our bodies. So as we're seeing the anxiety and the rage improve, we'll start to see sleep improve. And then it sort of adds to it. And then the anxiety and rage continue to improve more as you're seeing the sleep improve. It's not likely that you're going to see sleep get better before you see anxiety and rage start to get better. It's going to be more of a downstream effect, because I think that the chicken and egg, whatever, the anxiety is oftentimes a big driver of the sleep stuff. So it's usually, again, it's like a more slow and steady, going to improve typically after we see rage improve. And as we start to see anxiety improve, it doesn't have to be the anxiety is fully resolved, but we usually see it start to improve and then sleep starts to come along as well. And the process you might see here is that they're not necessarily going to be ready to sleep alone yet, but they might be able to fall asleep easier and sleep through the night. Or it could be the reverse. It could be that they might still wake up sometimes, but they're willing to go to sleep by themselves. And then you start to see just increased capacity for sleep and increased quality of sleep. But it does tend to be like you kind of have to usually wait out some of the other stuff first. It doesn't mean you don't focus on it. It doesn't, or that you don't share. But the sleep, unless there's something really, really profound or unusual about like the length of time that you need to sleep, or, you know, if you sleep a short amount and feel better, or you're worse if you have short sleep than if you have long, like all of these different things, share the details, but it's probably not going to be the main thing that moves the needle for progress. Even when sleep does end up improving, that it's not necessarily because of the information about sleep that it's improving. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I don't remember at all like how sleep shifted for Avery. Like I don't remember when it started or what it looked like and what was improving along with it. The thing that I remember like so clearly was the first time I walked out of her room after only being in there for like an hour. And I was like, okay, surely like she's going to freak out any minute now and go back in there. And I just remember feeling like stunned that it only took an hour to get her to sleep, because that was like half the time that I normally spent trying to get her to sleep. And then it happened again. And then sleep, I don't know, probably waxed and waned, went back and forth. And then, you know, I remember at some point walking out of her room somewhere around 20 minutes. And I was like, what is going on? It's crazy. Like she was just able to fall asleep. So I don't remember where it was or anything, but I just remember it was life-giving to me to not have to do that routine, because as all PANS parents know that like nighttime uptick and all the things. And it's just crazy making, trying to get your kids to go to bed for myself and Avery both. Yeah. So as I was walking out feeling relieved for myself, I was also feeling a great deal of relief for her because she was actually getting rest.
Yeah.
More rest than normal.
And I'm not surprised that you don't have like a really clear memory of sleep, in spite of the fact that sleep is such an important thing and was so life-giving when you were able to have access to better sleep. Because what you're describing is what we see with so many people, that it's happening in the midst of other things. Uh-huh. And so I see people and have heard people routinely give like huge hallelujahs because of a sleep win. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always nestled in with a lot of other things. And so it gets in big picture recollection, it's not as clear as some of the other symptoms that have a profound impact on the daily life and that can have more rapid shifts with homeopathy, more like bigger swings with homeopathy. One other thing I think is worth mentioning as we talk about sleep, and this will legitimately, I believe, actually be a short episode, because so much of sleep depends on and is connected to the other symptoms. I guess before I move on to this other thing, I should say if the urinary stuff is driving it, the urinary things, oftentimes they take a little bit longer. So mental and behavioral symptoms tend to move faster and improving, and physical symptoms tend to be on the slower side to improve. We always talk about how the same remedy, like the same force, can blow away it can change things, right? So if we're saying a sand dune versus a cloud, and like the remedy is the wind that's trying to move a cloud versus moving a sand dune, the exact same wind will have an impact on both, but the cloud is going to move away faster and look like it's moved away faster, be very obvious it's moved away faster than a sand dune with the same wind. But the wind is still being, if it's blowing across a sand dune, it's still moving the sand and it can still blow it down. It just takes longer. So physical symptoms are more like the sand dune, and mental and behavioral symptoms are more like the cloud. So sleep is sort of mixed in the middle. If I had to choose one or the other, if we're in a black and white situation, which nothing is black and white in the world, I would put it more in the physical response rate. Mm-hmm. And especially if we have additional physical things that are contributing to it. So also pain. I mean, some kids have pretty profound pain as part of their symptoms. And so if there's pain that's associated with it too, the pain is got to get better before sleep is really going to improve. And again, this doesn't mean don't focus on sleep, focus on this other thing and ignore sleep. Sleep is still important. And you might have a really vital component to your case history in sleep that you don't want to miss because you just decided I want to focus on this other thing. We always have to focus on the totality of symptoms. So we can't say, oh, I think sleep isn't improving because there's pain, or I can't think sleep isn't improving because there's urinary frequency, urgency, bedwetting, you name it, that now I want to focus on this. So it's not going to go the way you want. You can at best get palliative responses in most cases, unless you happen to purely luck into a remedy that has deeper healing while you're ignoring the totality of the case.
Yeah.
So the other thing I was thinking about before I interrupted my own thoughts to come back to cover that part is rituals around sleep, because we all have bedtime routines, every single one of us. But when you are dealing with pans and pandas, so frequently the bedtime rituals can become overwhelming and overpowering. And one of the things that we need to adjust to is to recognize that the rituals associated, if there's like a pathologic ritual associated with it, an OCD-based ritual, that we're likely going to see the gradual reduction of the rituals like we see with OCD, and it's probably not going to completely go away. And we need to like settle down into the realm of normal. And I bring this up because I've had more than one conversation with more than one client about the ritual associated with bedtime that got so wrapped up in Pan's OCD that it became a trigger and problematic for the parents, that had reached a point that was normal and that was honestly less of a ritual, less time consuming, less overwhelming than the ritual I have with saying goodnight to my daughter, or my ritual for getting myself into bed. And within the absence of PANS could be this like really lovely way to say, you know, good night or to wear your lovely thing that you do. But that once it's been wrapped up into an OCD, it can feel really, really challenging. And so like we say with OCD, we're not going to see a complete elimination of any intrusive thought or any unwanted thought ever. It's about how we navigate through them. And so there is an adaptation that you might need to have as a parent to recognize that any rituals related to bedtime or sleep that might have included you could still be happening. We just need to have like the clenched hold on them, the iron grip that they have on your functioning, and the need to do them a certain number of times or done an exact right way. That will loosen, and you might still have a similar thing that your child just needs to say goodnight to you in a certain way or give you a kiss or do a certain thing, call you back if this thing wasn't completed. But you'll see like a loosening of it and hopefully get to the place that if something happens and you just can't do it or you're in a different space or you forget that your mind is blown because your kid doesn't call you back to make sure you do it. But there can be some amount of normal, again, depending on the age of the child for younger kids, especially needing to have things done a certain way.
Thing that you taught me or you helped me figure out that I think is worth sharing. I think a lot of times it's like, even though I gave Avery a ton of grace, like this nighttime thing was hard for me. And a lot of times I just saw a defiant kid that obviously was struggling, but like just wouldn't go to bed. And I was frustrated in it. And at one point you told me, you started asking me questions about what's happening, what's she talking about, da 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 da, all these things. And I wasn't recognizing that intrusive thoughts were wrapped up in there. So like you kind of walked me through like, is there something else going on? So I think like paying attention to more than just this bedtime routine that's insane. Like what's your kid talking about? What's the process? Like talk to your provider about those type of things. And then, you know, you just kind of helped me see that there was something else there because I did not know that Avery was having intrusive thoughts. I thought she was just having sleep issues. And you were the one who like guided me to understanding and then held my hand until I was ready to talk to her about it and ask her what she was feeling. Yeah. So like pay attention to the like things that are going on in the middle of that routine. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I also want to just acknowledge that this is the hardest time of day for every parent, whether you're dealing with PANS or not, but especially if you're dealing with PANS, it is the hardest time of day because you are exhausted. They're exhausted. Yeah. Resources are depleted and you just want to get to bed so that you can either do the research you need to do or take care of the thing or have a minute to yourself or go to sleep or whatever. And it's just the time of day where we've made all of the decisions that we have made throughout the day and all of the expectations that we've had or stresses that we've had that they've just piled up and piled up and we need relief. And so it can be really challenging to pause and have that opportunity or that space for curiosity and compassion because dear Lord, just go to sleep. Like just go to sleep. I just need this done. Why can't we just do this? Like, so give yourself a bit of grace. And if you are struggling and in a situation like this, where you're just, this is what you're reporting and you're not sure if you're missing something, maybe ask your provider. Are there things I should be asking? Are there things that maybe we don't know that are happening during sleep that would be helpful? I'll say to my clients frequently, I'll say, if I were a fly on the wall in your house, what would I see? As a way to sort of get people out of their explaining place and into the describing place. And maybe you could do the reverse and you could ask your provider, could say, if you were in my house, wanting to understand what's happening, what would you ask?
Yeah. I feel like later in Avery's healing journey, you asked me that enough times that when things were going on, I used to tell myself, and I give moms this example all the time. I used to tell myself in the middle of managing things, I'd be like, Dr. Bar goggles, Dr. Bar goggles. And I would just tell myself that over and over again. And I'm like, okay, register this to your memory because this is like, she's a fly on the wall right now. And like, put those goggles on and see the things, like notice the things that you would want to see. I think it helps.
I just imagine what the Dr. Bar goggles would look like. And with the fly on the wall, if it was like like fly eyes.
Large.
All right. So hang in there if you're dealing with sleep. It will get better. Yep. And it's probably going to take longer than you want because everything, we want everything to go away overnight. Some things can change very rapidly overnight, as we've talked about in other episodes. Sleep is probably not going to be one of those that's going to change really rapidly overnight. And you might need to utilize some tools and strategies to help support along the way. You can talk to your providers about various different non-medication and non-supplement interventions to help really support the natural circadian rhythm and things like that to help facilitate as best as you can along the way in case there's just a circadian rhythm mismatch that has been more permanently cemented through the sleep disruption patterns. So there are some things that you can do to help give some support along the way. And it's going to just take a little bit of time and it's going to happen in the mix of other things. And you'll have small victories that you will be able to share, but it's probably going to get a little bit fuzzy like it did for Jody, because it's something that happens little by little and generally is taking place along many, many other changes at the same time. So it often doesn't stand out as profoundly in the big picture.
Yeah. I feel like, can I say one more thing? I feel like parents need to be spoken to on this topic too. Chad, kind of to swing it back around to our own sleep deprivation, this is another place where it's so important to do your own healing. I cannot explain how life-changing homeopathy was for me, just for only for the sleep thing. And in really coming out of PANS, I was addicted to staying up late. I think it was an addiction for me because I was so used to either managing symptoms or doing research. Avery got better and I just kept staying up like really, really late. And I was just addicted to it. It was just, that's who I've been for the last 2 years. I'm just keep doing it. And it was starting homeopathy myself and very early on having the ability to actually fall asleep and get better quality of sleep. It's just like, it was so life-changing for me to do that. So if you are able to do homeopathy and get that better quality of sleep for yourself, I highly, highly encourage it because it really is a game changer.
Well, and it really helps too, because if you're staying up late to try and solve something, to research or to try and figure things out, you're going to be less effective in what your role is in homeopathy, which is strictly observing, not finding figuring things out, because that's your provider's job. Your job is to observe. And we rely on you to be a good observer because we can't be a fly on the wall in your house. So we need you to be able to put those goggles on to be the fly for us. And so the more you are restored from sleep, the better things are going to go, because one, you're going to be able to be present and observe. And two, you're going to have better resources to have the patience to sit with some uncomfortable things as you are observing, instead of trying to get in and fix or change or navigate and like control a situation. And you're also just probably going to handle the ups and downs that come with PANS, regardless of what type of therapy you're using, better if you're sleeping. So ultimately, we're staying up to try and get to resolution better when resolution is more likely to be available and accessible to us because we've slept more.
So obvious. Didn't have that figured out for a long time.
And yet, we're all human and we all make poor decisions about sleep on a regular basis for a lot of people. Okay, I think that's it for sleep for today. So as always, if you guys have any questions, join us in a Facebook group and we're happy to answer them if you've got specifics so we can help educate and help you really know what to expect and have the most ease as possible as you're navigating this recovery journey from PANS and PANDAS so that you can put it in the past for your kiddo and for your family.
Yep.
All right. Take care, everybody.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for PANS and PANDAS.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.